A few years ago, my wife and I were asked to be presenters for a marriage preparation program. And this program is a required element for engaged couples seeking sacramental marriage in the Catholic Church. And yes, there are still couples wanting that sacrament. Fewer than there used to be, but they're still coming. And the challenge for us is always to make sense of the freedom that we have to enter into a permanent faithful marriage open to children in line with God's desire and God's covenant call into this kind of relationship. Part of our training was to observe other couples making these presentations. And at one point, we were introduced as observers to the couples in the room. And the coordinator of the program gave our names and happened to mention that we had been married for 40 years at that time. I still remember to this day that there was a kind of audible gasp in the room when that was mentioned. And it was in that moment that I realized that today, even couples coming to the church for the sacrament of marriage don't know how lifelong faithful marriage is possible. Today's gospel passage has the Pharisees testing Jesus again. That never happens, does it? Well, if they can trick him into contradicting Moses, he will lose his credibility as a Messiah. The question is whether divorce is lawful in some circumstances. Underlying the question, I believe, are two deeper ones. One is marriage a covenant relationship reflecting God's faithfulness? And can such a covenant relationship be broken? Is that permissible? As usual, the Pharisees have hostile intent, but Jesus makes it about God's plan from the beginning and about justice. There were two Pharisaic schools of thought on this matter. One was that a man could divorce his wife for infidelity or immorality. But there was a liberal view that was circulating at that time of Jesus as well. And that was that a man could do the same, divorce his wife, even for a trivial matter like burning dinner. So there is a serious question of justice, since only the husband had this option. So this was not equality of the sexes within marriage was definitely not being considered at this point. But Jesus makes the whole question about God. First, God's plan for man and woman is built into their natures from the beginning. Second, marriage is to reflect God's own faithfulness. Jesus goes on to say that Moses gave an exception because people are hard-hearted and are unwilling to love like God does. I remember, for some reason, reflecting on this, I remembered a sad situation with a coworker years ago, and he and his wife had suffered a family tragedy. Months later, he told me that they were splitting up. He said that they just couldn't find a way to support each other through that difficult time. And to my question about whether they could turn to God for the grace to help each other get through, he only indicated that there was no way that that was going to happen. They were in a kind of a wilderness with no help. Now, Moses had lowered the level of moral expectation for a people who had shown themselves too stubborn to live by God's high standards with respect to marriage relationship. But with his words, Jesus makes himself history's greatest defender of the sanctity and permanence of marriage. But then the disciples come into the conversation. That's too hard. Then it must be better not to get married. And I wonder if it sounds to you like it did to me, that this is a lot like another conversation where Jesus talks about entry into the kingdom of heaven being more difficult than a camel passing through the eye of a needle. Who then can be saved, they asked at that time. And Jesus had said that for humans, it is impossible. But for God, all things are possible. And we might apply the same principle to marriage relationships. And we know there are many different situations, and we know that that sometimes relationships just can't work because of abuse or addiction or other kinds of things. But there's a principle here that Jesus is trying to get across, that faithfulness between husband and wife, like faithfulness in other relationships, needs to be put in the context of God's faithfulness. Moses had lowered the level of moral expectation for a people who had shown themselves too stubborn to live by the Lord's high standards. And with his words, Jesus makes himself, as I've said, history's greatest defender of the sanctity and permanence of marriage. Now, the word grace does not appear in these verses, but the idea that God can enable men and women to fulfill this exalted vocation is built into the discussion. It's kind of hidden in there. It's latent in there. Only when the Lord enriches our lives with his grace can the ideal marriage for life become the real experience of men and women joined to each other as one flesh. And then there's this alternative that that Jesus proposes to them when they say, you know, maybe marriage isn't really possible, or maybe it's better not to get married. And there's all this talk about eunuchs, but essentially this means, at least according to commentaries, that Jesus is really talking about a celibate life. A celibate life in total service to God is an alternative, but that's not necessarily easier, and is only for those called to that life and that way of serving God. Now, if we turn to try to make sense of this first reading from the book of Joshua, you may have noticed that the weekday first readings have been taking us on quite a clip, quite a speed through the Old Testament. In the book of Joshua, the people of Israel are now in the land of promise. God has been faithful through an incredibly twisted road from Abraham to Egypt, to freedom from slavery, to the wilderness, and finally to the land of promise. And the biggest obstacle, as with marriage, has always been the people's own stubborn refusal to be faithful to God, who is faithful to them. But Joshua, who has led them after the death of Moses, in his farewell address to the leaders of the people, is reminding them of all that God has done, the one true God who has joined himself to them despite their unfaithfulness. I think it's one of the greatest speeches of all time, even better than Shakespeare. And it's interesting that Joshua includes the specific incident where King Balak is worried about the Israelites, and he asks the prophet Balaam to curse them. But God will only provide a blessing for Balaam to proclaim. And so God's message is always, I choose you, and these are the things that I have done for you. Tomorrow, in the second half of this passage, which is the second half of the last chapter of the book of Joshua, Joshua will invite the people to renew their covenant to the Lord and to make a choice, the same choice before you and I today. Will you serve the gods of the land? And I think you know there are many gods of the land open to us today. Or will you serve the God who is faithful? You and I must choose. But when we do, consider God's everlasting faithfulness to his great plan of salvation and to our participation in that plan. Perhaps our main action today is to recognize the depth of God's faithfulness. As the psalmist says, God's love is everlasting. It is essentially from all time, and it is for all time. And this may seem impossible for us in our relationships, whether in marriage or in other relationships, perhaps because we think God is angry, or we think of God as an angry God, like some do, or because we are aware of our own sinfulness and our own limitations. But this is exactly what God wants us to know. It is precisely because of our hard-heartedness and our limited capacity for total commitment that we must renew our confidence in the faithfulness of God. Otherwise, our own faithfulness to each other in marriage or in any relationship will indeed be impossible. However, as Jesus says in another place in the Gospels, with God, all things are possible.